Just a few minutes listening to the news gives you the clear picture that COVID-19 cases are on the rise. The world total is over 800,000 cases now. The United States has about one-fifth of those. The American death toll for COVID-19 just passed 3,000. Some more people have died from the virus than died in the September 11th terrorist attacks. Dr. Jim Shames is the chief medical officer at Jackson County Health and Human Services. He joins us once again to give an overview of the situation in Jackson County and to field questions from you and me about where we go from here. The number again, 800-838-3760. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Dr. Shames, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for inviting me, Jeff.
Sure, good to have you. Run the numbers again, if you would. I still have a figure of 20 as of yesterday. Is that right?
We usually get a report around 8 o'clock from the state that sort of compiles all the numbers. But as of yesterday, we have 20. That's right.
Which is what, about triple what you had a week before, isn't it?
Yeah, this is what exponential rise really represents. It's when the numbers stay small and then fairly quickly rise. Also, it reflects a backlog of testing finally kind of getting unlog-jammed so that we're getting results from quite a while ago.
What do you know about where the tests are coming from? Who's delivering them, and how fast are they rendering results? I know we've heard about the newer test. I don't know if that's made its way out here yet.
Well, there's a lot of technological possibilities, but the supply chain is really where the weak point is. So you might be up and running and have the capability of doing, you know, quick tests with our turnaround, but if you don't have the reagents or you don't have the swabs, or, you know, you don't have the PPE to perform the test, then that becomes the issue. And that's currently the issue for us.
All right. So everybody picked up on your phrase in the Friday release about the rapid community spread of COVID-19. Would you flesh the concept out a bit for us about rapid community spread?
Well, it's really a mathematical inevitability, so to speak. If you have a disease with a certain rate of infectivity, and each disease is unique in that respect.
Is that the R-naught?
That's the R-naught.
Replication number? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So the R-naught for this disease is somewhere between 2 and 3, meaning I get sick, and before I get well, I've infected 2 or 3 other people. And what happens is, as more and more people get infected, it multiplies very quickly. And so at first you don't notice it, and then there's a very rapid rise. And we've all seen these curves of what's happened in New York, what's happened in Italy, what's happened in other countries. And the curve gets very steep very quickly. Everything we're doing now from a public health perspective is to flatten that curve, to take what would happen inevitably, and to spread it out so we can respond appropriately over the long haul.
Now, you mentioned that curve, which I'm looking at the worldometers.info site that shows the coronavirus cases, and it's updated regularly. And from, let's see, when this started really heading north, about March 16th or so is when it just sort of took off skyward, and it hasn't shown any signs of leveling off again since.
Right. And it's happening in a patchy fashion. I mean, New York City is being devastated. And then, meanwhile, I'm sure there's people sitting around in rural parts of the country going, what's the big deal? And that's also the nature of what happens with pandemics. One community gets hit hard and then moves on to another community. And hopefully we can prepare ourselves and learn lessons from the communities that were unfortunate enough to go first.
Dr. Shames, is there a pandemic playbook, per se? And I don't mean for, like, the national authorities. We assume they have one handy because they have pandemic teams and that sort of thing. But at local health agencies like yours, is there a prescribed set of procedures that will be locked into place when something hits or is declared a pandemic?
Kind of. Because it's a novel virus, we're learning as we go. And, you know, everybody in leadership positions is just reading and communicating as fast as they can to make sure that they're staying current and trying things that will be innovative for their particular responsibility. For example, I think the medical leadership at the hospitals and really all over this community are doing an amazingly great job to do their best to prepare with what often is inadequate amounts of resources. The CDC, the Oregon Health Authority, the World Health Organization, you know, they're the primary information gathering bodies that really provide the guidance for most of us. You know, we don't deviate too terribly far from that.
Dr. Jim Shames, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Jackson County's Chief Medical Officer at the County Health and Human Services Department, giving us an update on where things stand. You're welcome to join the conversation, ask your questions, tell us about experiences you have had that we need to hear about. 800-838-3760 is the phone number. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Let's come back to the replication number, the R-naught. You mentioned R2 to 3. From what we know so far about COVID-19, that makes it a bit more than seasonal flu, doesn't it? And quite a bit more.
Quite a bit more, yeah. Seasonal flu, although we think of it as being so highly contagious, it is significantly less contagious than this disease has proven to be.
All right, and so what is the seasonal flu of an R-naught of less than one or something?
Well, less than two. Uh-huh. Yeah, if it was less than one, it probably wouldn't propagate itself.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I see what you mean. You could infest less than one person.
Yeah.
Measles, though, for example. I remember the first time I learned about R-naughts, this was really fascinating. Measles has an R-naught of like 18 or something.
Exactly. Yeah, so the concept is that if you have a completely vulnerable population, no one is protected, then you can expect that many people to get infected from one case. So in the case of measles, it would be 18 other individuals from one person with measles. And then those 18 will then probably infect 18 more. And you can see how very quickly the numbers would get huge. As it turns out, you know, we have a vaccine for measles, and so that doesn't occur. But we have no vaccine for this disease, and we have no protection. So it's a very vulnerable planet that is being ravaged by COVID-19.
Let me run through the numbers from Jackson County because it gets interesting in age groups because it's divided up now from birth to 19, 20 to 29, and in 10-year increments beyond there. So 20 to 29, two cases, 30 to 39, two cases, 40 to 49, one case, and then it really begins to pick up steam, no
right.
surprise. 50
right.
to 59, three cases, right. 60 to 69, four cases, 70 to 79, eight cases. So we are not kidding about the weakened immune systems for people later in life.
Right, right. And again, we have to remind ourselves that what we're looking at here is positive tests. And so we're still trying to figure out exactly how much penetration this disease has had in our community. We're still not going to know that for a while.
Well, we have an email from somebody, from Susan, no town given, says, we are both in the high-risk group. Are we supposed to go out shopping for food or not? And there's the emoji of hands-up question mark.
Right. Well, if you could, if you could batch your shopping so that people sort of take the quote-unquote risk, you know, less frequently, then there are many ways you can go shopping, and there's many stores that are really trying to make it as easy as possible. For one thing, you can do online shopping. Some places will deliver. Costco will deliver food for you. Some places are having, you know, opening up early for those that are older who perhaps want a bit more protection. There's a number of good videos online that kind of explain how to negotiate your way from your house to the shopping and back again. But the bottom line is to just remember that wherever your hands have been, is a potential point of contact, and avoid touching your face or your mouth. Wash your hands frequently with either soap and water or some kind of cleaning product that you can either make or buy. And now the recommendation would be to wear a mask when you go out into public, so that we can reduce the possibility of getting COVID when you leave your house to the extent possible.
Now, I noticed that beginning to arise in reports today about the idea of having your nose and mouth covered in public.
Right.
So is that an actual recommendation from the CDC at this point?
They're evolving to that. I personally am evolving to that. I see very little downside, and I think there's evidence that there may be additional protection that would be you know, for one thing, if you're wearing a mask, you're less likely to touch your mouth and your nose. So if you're touching an object that might have COVID on it, you're less likely to infect yourself. We now know that the disease can transmit itself even when people don't have symptoms. So you could be standing close to somebody who is speaking to you, incubating the disease, and you could conceivably get it that way. It's kind of destigmatizing. We had been asking people who were sick to wear masks, and now you don't have to, you know, point your finger and say, ah, you must be sick because you're wearing a mask. Everybody's wearing a mask. The issue is that we can't run the supply of manufactured surgical masks down by everybody buying one and wearing one. So I do think that the cloth masks, the do-it-yourself masks, bandanas are reasonable, and I think that I think we could easily accept that as the new norm.
All right, so any kind of cloth you can get in front of nose and mouth, not a bad idea, you're saying at this point, particularly if you're in one of the higher risk groups, or is this for everybody?
It could be for everybody. I mean, the thing about everybody in this situation is ultimately it's going to transmit to a high risk group. So even if you're not in a high risk group, you don't want to get this disease because it can make you quite sick, and B, you know, ultimately by your getting it, you're going to end up spreading it to somebody who is high risk.
Do you, in terms of the, coming back to Susan's question about grocery shopping and your point about trying to batch it, I mean, do you recommend avoiding different kinds of food? I mean, I get into the mind of the produce aisle where people squeeze a lot of things or pick them up and look at them and go, nah,
yeah,
not this
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to tell people not to eat fresh fruits and vegetables. I wonder what your advice might be on that, though.
Well, I think we have to assume that anything that was just recently touched by another human's hand could transmit the virus to you, whether it be the people who just stocked the shelves in the morning, or, you know, the produce person or the shopper just in front of you. And that's the reason that you want to be really clear about sanitizing your hands after you're done with your shopping experience. Or if you have gloves and you can wear them, there are creative ways to minimize your risk, but you know, once you leave your house and start interacting with other people, you're assuming a small amount of risk.
Yeah, Dr. Jim Shames, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the Chief Medical Officer at Jackson County Health and Human Services. You're welcome to join our conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. No town given on this email from J. Nick, I'm going to say. Looks like an Ashland. It says, please talk about sanitizing groceries.
So the reason I mentioned that there's some good information on the internet is that it gets a little complicated in terms of what kinds of cleaning products you might use on what surfaces. Bleach, for example, is useful in many respects, but should be avoided on some objects. I think just washing things with soap and water, for example, you were talking about fruits and vegetables. They can be, you know, certainly fruits can be washed just like you wash your hands. And that ought to offer quite a bit of protection. You can leave things alone for a while, in the sense that the virus doesn't really live very long on inanimate objects. You can wipe it down with a dilute solution of bleach, or in some cases, like a surface of your phone, for example, maybe an alcohol solution. Lots of different ways to do it. Often just putting the groceries aside, or putting that box you just received aside, or opening it with gloves on, or opening it and taking the contents out and then washing your hands afterwards. The risk is pretty low from inanimate objects, unless you just, you know, unless the proximity of the person who is infected who touched it following you touching it was pretty immediate, and then if you then put your hand to your mouth or your nose.
Mm-hmm. So no sneaking grapes at the grocery store at this point in history.
Not a good idea.
Okay, right. I've also heard that best to, as Jim said, put it aside for things like vegetables, rinse them before you cook them.
Yes.
For the rinsing, because otherwise they could get soggy and kind of mushy down on the bottom of the fridge and all that sort of thing. So something else to think about there. I did want to ask about disinfectants, though, because, you know, people have had trouble. I haven't seen alcohol on store shelves in a couple of weeks now myself, but I'm also avoiding stores as much as possible. If you don't have alcohol, don't have bleach, peroxide, I don't know, vodka, what are some of the things that might work as disinfectants?
Well, you know, you're kind of stretching what I know at this point. Ammonia solutions, bleach, and, you know, you can, I don't know, I also haven't been in the store in a while, but if you can buy bleach in bulk, you can always take it down to a 5% solution and put it in a spray bottle, for example. Soap and water, still there's plenty of that around.
Mm-hmm. We had an interesting kind of chat yesterday with an endocrinologist about the viruses and the fact that they often have a lipid layer on them. And that's, you're actually dissolving them, dissolving viruses by soap and water?
I don't know if you're totally dissolving it. You do break the surface membrane.
Mm-hmm.
And once that's broken, the virus can't infect you anymore. And apparently this virus is pretty fragile. I mean, some viruses are not. And it's not so easy to, you know, kill them and immobilize them. But this one apparently is. The other thing to realize is when people say that the virus exists on a surface for days to weeks or what have you, that doesn't mean it's entirely infectious during that period of time. The infectivity is probably shortly after the object's been touched.
Okay, so not that long afterward, you're saying, but we're still talking, what, 3 days is what I heard on stainless steel surfaces like that?
I heard that. Mm-hmm. I don't know that anybody knows whether it could actually infect you after 3 days.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, how confident are we in the medical field, I'm using the we meaning you, about exactly what the transmission is? Because there's talk of surfaces, there's talk of through the air transmission, droplets hanging there for a long time, not just, I mean, gravity takes over after a while, and the droplets get to the floor, right?
So droplet spread means that the droplets that come out of your mouth are relatively large. They don't go terribly far away from you, and they fall to the ground. That's the reason for the 6-foot distancing. Aerosolized means it gets into the air and it just floats around. There are aerosolizing procedures. For example, when somebody is intubated in the hospital, there is, in that process, some of the virus can become aerosolized. That's the reason that the people performing those activities in the hospital need to wear full protective garb, including N95 mask or something similar to it. But aside from that, we do not believe that this virus wants to aerosolize particularly. Unlike measles, for example, which can float through the air and go great distances, every disease is different. The characteristics need to be adapted to by, you know, the behaviors that we adopt. And that's the reason that social distancing is so critical for this, is because it really is transmitted by close contact with another person who may or may not know they're incubating the disease. It's not magic. It doesn't fly across the room at you. So we can do this, and this is our most powerful tool at the moment to keep from having a disease just spread rapidly through any particular community.
Well, and again, if it's got a replication number of 3, one person can affect 3 other people. Those 3 then affect 9. Then you get, you know, the math just goes on from there. It does get logarithmic. And I just saw a little bit of spittle come out of my mouth. It's weird how much you think about things that you didn't used to think about when you're dealing with coronavirus around. Dr. Jim Shames, when I look at the numbers for Jackson County, 20 cases, only 4 of whom were ever hospitalized. It doesn't seem like the hospitals are getting a lot of pressure, at least in actual cases, but I don't know what's going on in the emergency rooms. Are there lots of visits from people who are scared, having some sort of symptoms, and think they have coronavirus?
At this moment, I think our community is doing a really good job. The EDs are not overwhelmed. In fact, things in some parts of the healthcare system are kind of slow. People are staying at home. We're doing a lot more televisits. What's happening behind the scenes is an awful lot of preparation and getting ready for, planning alternative ways of doing our health care so that we can handle the surge when it comes. Hopefully, the public will do its part so that when the surge comes, it's really not that bad and that we can manage it. But we're preparing for, you know, not enough of everything. We already don't have enough personal protective equipment, and we already don't have enough testing materials to perform the tests that we have the capability of. So shortages are happening, but planning is going full tilt.
And the whole point being that if we just keep people apart for longer, the full tilt will come later. Give you a chance to catch up, maybe?
Well, the full tilt won't be full. Mm-hmm. I mean, it'll be, you know, we will have, we'll stress our system, but we'll be able to compensate and cope and, you know, bring in personnel and recycle things and get through it until either enough people have had the disease that it just can't be transmitted so easily. Perhaps we'll have come up with treatments and or, you know, vaccines. Maybe it'll kind of burn out in the summer. You know, there's things we don't know. But what we do know is that we can't handle the kind of surge of cases that, you know, you're seeing happening in Manhattan right now.
Right, yeah, New York has got it really bad.
Yeah.
Question from Steve and Eugene via email. He says the only bleach left at the stores was, quote, non-disinfecting bleach. Will that work?
I'm not sure what that means. I can't say. I'm really used to sort of regular concentrated bleach. So,
We'll mark that as a don't know. Okay.
Yeah.
Susan O'Town Given wants to know, do you know when we should be hitting the peak here? Are there any estimates on when we might get that?
It could be months. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that it's possible that June or so might be the peak. It really depends on our behavior. I mean, if we, if we continue to aggressively do social distancing, then the peak may not be such a peak, and it may be quite a ways into the future.
Okay, so but we're really shoving it down in time, and we hope down in numbers as well, as the
exactly.
whole point of social distancing. James Shames is the medical officer, the chief medical officer for Jackson County through the Health and Human Services Department, joining us once again to answer your questions about coronavirus. We very much appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey.
Okay, take it easy.